You are listening to episode number 65 of Brian's Period, a.k.a. the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 65 of the Mighty Warrior Stream Marvel Podcast. First and foremost, I am your host, Ben. Joining us, President, his newest title, news correspondent, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, how's it feel to be a news correspondent?
Fuck you.
Joining us from all the way from San Francisco, Mr. Arnold Alfred. Arnold, welcome back to the show.
What? When did I move?
I guess he didn't get it.
Oh, I got it.
Oh, he got it.
Hey.
And ladies and gentlemen, the New York Strangler, Taser.
Hi.
And of course, like I already mentioned my name, if this is your first time listening to us out of the 65 other podcasts, probably near 70, considering all the specials we've done,
There you go.
Or what we're about to do. We are the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel. But before we get into the comics, we want to be a little serious right now. This past Friday, a man known as Macho Man Randy Savage died in a car accident due to a heart attack and crashed his car. Macho Man, I'm pretty sure most people in their at least teens now are unaware of the greatness that is the Macho Man, but he was a professional wrestler from probably the 70s to about 2004. You remember the ads of Snap It to a Slim Jim or his famous catchphrase, "Oh yeah," or even his comics role to connect to the comics as Bonesaw McGraw in Spider-Man 1. Macho Man, we're each going to say our things, but Macho Man was probably the only person. He was had more charisma than Hulk Hogan, in my opinion. And then you combine the fact of his in-ring ability. You know, as a fan who loves the aspect of wrestling, not just the talks or the interviews, but the actual matches and the nuance of a match. The man could get a good match out of more people than he should have. You know, he stole the show on a lot of occasions, you know, and a lot of people remember WrestleMania 7 when he reunited with Miss Elizabeth, and that was despite that it's fake and everything, but just proves how much of an impact that these wrestlers made on people's lives. And I can only hope that Randy is with Miss Elizabeth in heaven right now, you know, considering she died several years ago. But, you know, Godspeed, God bless to Randy's family. It was a shame that he, you know, either A, didn't want to come back, or B, never got the chance to come back to one more time or one more, you know, around to in the WWE where he made his name and we Macho Bandis and Macho King, you know. And if you haven't already, go buy his DVD. There's called Macho Bandis. It basically tells you everything you need to know about Randy Savage. Snap It to a Slim Jim for him. So we're each going to give our thoughts on Randy. Taser, you probably having the most memories of his prime in the late 80s to early 90s. What are your thoughts on any words to say about Macho Man?
I'm going to miss this man. Randy Savage brought the asshole out. And it just, he wasn't as much an asshole as freaking Rowdy Roddy Piper, but you know what, he was the man. You know, he had his woman come out, spread the ropes for him. You know, he told her what to do. He was the man. And then he would get in the ring and, you know, dominate whatever toss away wrestler that they put him up against. And, you know, if he went up against a name, he gave them, you know, the quick run through. Yeah, sure, it was all scripted and whatever, but his character before and after was just awesome. You know, you love to hate him because he talked shit, and he, you know, by script he backed it up. And just to see him, you know, just look at Miss Elizabeth and send her over there, and she toss her eyes down and just, you know, and to see that woman come out just all like debutante-ish, you know, she had that Southern woman thing going for her, and to see her just kowtow was like, oh, you son of a, you suck, Hogan, kill him, and to watch him, you know, beat on Hogan, man, I very few wrestlers did I hate and love to hate, and Macho Man Randy Savage was one of them. I can't speak for the man outside the ring. That's a whole other story, and I'm not going to do it here. I'd like to say, I wish good luck to his second wife who survived the accident, and I'd like to send out condolences to his brother Leaping Lenny Poffo, and anybody else in the family that, you know, I don't know about. I'd like to give much respect and my condolences, because the Macho Man was, he was something else, man.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to miss him.
Thank you, Taser. And let's go to the next person who actually, you know, around the same time. Arnold, you remember the Macho Man. Final, any thoughts on words that you want to say about Randy?
Yeah, Taser. I mean, Taser got a good chunk of it out there. Again, Macho Man was out. And wrestling around the time where I used to watch wrestling, probably the last times I remember and enjoy watching wrestling, because I really haven't watched it in forever. But he's definitely one of the people that always stand out in my mind. He was always, you know, the wrestling at that time was always flashy and whatnot, but it seems like he was always that extra, as Taser said. Like, he was always just in your face and you know, talking smack and all the time, but he held his own, and it was good times to watch. Like, he was definitely fun to watch, and even in Spider-Man, you know, albeit comical and for what it was definitely cool that they got him in there, so now he's got that whole comic connection going for him, so it came out of nowhere. Like, it's definitely naturally for everyone, just completely, completely unexpected. So yeah, that's about it for me.
Brian, and I know you're probably the least aware of the Macho Man, but any words you want to say about Randy?
Well, I did. You're true. I never saw any of his matches back when he was wrestling, but I knew of him. And, you know, like, as Taser said, that kind of guy who comes out with that kind of personality, that kind of charisma, you know, word gets around. And even when he wasn't wrestling, I heard about the Macho Man. Just the character he was this powerful and memorable. And really, he made his mark in industry alongside the greats of Hulk Hogan. You know, he was up there, man. And, you know, just taken from us, it's kind of hard to believe that someone like that, you know, especially when you have this ingrained just memory of this guy being, you know, who he is, it's just it's almost, you know, it's hard to comprehend, but, you know, what can I really say? You know, stuff happens, and, you know, he really was a great wrestler, great character, and he will be missed, you know. So again, my condolences to the family and such, and I can only pray that he and Elizabeth are chilling whatever in heaven, maybe putting on a show. You never know. But just my deepest sympathies to the family.
So. Yeah, just to close it out, but, you know, like everybody said, Randy was probably next to Hogan, even more than Hogan, had more charisma and definitely more in-ring ability. And, you know, I think more, if you showed people like the cowboy hat with the big glasses and the Slim Jim, people was, oh, that's the Macho Man, you know, and it's just this. I mean, his theme song was "Pop and Circumstance." Every person graduates to that. You graduate out of Macho Man University. so it's like the one thing I've, as a wrestling fan, I continue to watch wrestling to this day. And the one thing I keep waiting, maybe Macho Man will come back just for one night only, you know, and now sadly it's never going to happen, but, you know, he's not in pain anymore. He's, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, he was 58 years old, but, we'll miss you, Macho.
And gray. Could not believe that. I saw that last picture of him with his wife. He was gray. Yeah. blew my freaking mind. I didn't think he'd ever go gray. Yeah. He was Randy Macho Man Savage.
Yeah, well, we all miss you, the Warriors 3. We all miss you, Mach. We wish you could still be around, but, you know, it was time for you to go, man. Sad to say it. I hope his second wife, does well. Hope she's okay. But let's get out of the melancholy, and let's move into some more lighthearted. Let's make fun of Brian. There you go. let's go right into it. The only piece of news, Brian, our news correspondent. What is the piece of news that we have today?
Oh God. Okay. Well, what we have in front of us now, the only really news we could think of or that was relevant, is Robert Rodriguez calling out the Deadpool directorial rumors. He called the rumors bizarre, and he said that he had gotten a hold of a script, copy of the Deadpool script, and he read it over, and he is unsure of where these rumors that he was directing the movie came from. He said that he was far too busy, too much on his slate, and he, in fact, is not going to be doing the movie. So that's what we got for right now. So comments, this is, I don't know.
He sucks.
So the point is he's not directing Deadpool.
Yes, he is not directing the Deadpool movie. If it even gets made, it's in development hell.
Right then and there, Kills. I mean, I've said this before on the show, on previous episodes, whenever we talked about, I have no interest in the movie if Robert Rodriguez isn't, because I thought his style, the movie he wants to bring, you know, he's done a comic book adaptation. I'm not even talking about a literal translation, but in terms of the amount of fun he could make with Deadpool, you know, he was the guy. And now, unless they get another guy, they've gotten a guy, right? The visual effects writer, right?
Yeah, they've gotten, yeah. So it's going to be his first foray into directing. Yeah, so, I don't think both well.
It doesn't, this project, I mean, and even then, you already know, I don't even think Ryan Reynolds is the be-all to end-all of Deadpools. You know, I've stated that numerous times. This project, I mean, you needed Robert Rodriguez's name on there. Because outside of the comic community, you know, I mean, the appeal to Deadpool would be that he mouths off and that he shoot and he kills things, right? That would be the appeal?
That is essentially what he is. Yes,
you know,
what he is.
I mean, that could sell, but, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to say it's a Fox movie because I'm even getting sick and tired of saying that. But I'm very skeptical on if this is ever going to get out of development now, especially with Ryan Reynolds in Green Lantern, and who knows if that does well. You know Warner Brothers is going to sign him up to do Green Lantern 2. I'm pretty sure he has every other romantic comedy to do. So I don't know, man. This project,
you know, he's getting that Olivia Wilde buns. You know,
this project is dying for me. Maybe this is God's way of saying no Deadpool movie.
No, I don't think it's fair to doom and gloom it just yet. Yeah, I would have liked to have seen Robert Rodriguez on it, but I'll say this: if they get whatever director, you know, that they get for this, if the writer manages to capture the core essential parts of Doom of Deadpool. I'm about to say Doomsday. Hello, of Deadpool. You know, the whole wise ass. You know, blindly, violently. You know, slaying almost everything in sight, and him breaking the fourth wall. You know, they've got to do that. I would love to have him reference shit that has absolutely nothing to do with the world in which he is, but everything to do with ours. That's perfect. You know, if you get a director, regardless of whether he's a noob or somebody established, who manages to capture that stuff, that's important. And, you know, it could be E. Hermit Bundleschmitz. You know, I'd still check it out. You know, I don't think it's fair to doom and gloom it just because this one guy, you know, wasn't able to do it, because I think that's what it was. He just wasn't able to do it.
I'm very high on Robert Rodriguez, and
I know I understand that, and I like his work too. But I'm just saying,
you
I'm
just like him because he
made it. Because he's in Austin, Texas, I kind of wanted the movie to be made here. That's absolutely
selfish.
Hey, LA gets a lot of it, and New York occasionally gets it. Why can't
I? Don't care. You know, I could care less. If a movie didn't get made in my city, could
aside
not
that, you know, I really like Rodriguez's stuff.
I understand that.
Like, it's the fact that he's a local makes it even like, oh, this guy's from here, you know?
Yeah, he could do another Desperado or Dust Till Dawn, and you could see some relatives from back home.
Oh. Hey, it was nothing better than seeing George Clooney kill my cousin and Donna. All right. Well, you've given your thoughts, Arnold. Any of your thoughts on Robert Rodriguez not directing Deadpool in futures of this movie, if it's ever going to happen?
And you can't talk about
what?
You can't talk about how sexy he is.
No. It's got nothing to do with it. Yeah, I would have liked to see what he would have done with the film. I think he's definitely a good candidate to be on it, but now that we know that he's not, I guess I'm intrigued to see who they'll come up with next for it. I'm still kind of indifferent. Who?
The special effects guy. What's his name?
Exactly.
Yeah, what's his name?
Oh, that's right. Exactly. There you go.
It's his first directorial movie.
It's a pseudonym or whatever.
Oh, it's that guy.
Yeah, that dude over there who did that thing with the film and the stuff.
Yeah, the one who breathes and has hair.
Yep, that guy.
The gay one. Wait, what?
Ryan Singer. Anyway,
I'm just still kind of indifferent to the whole Deadpool movie.
Tim Miller. That's
cool.
It.
I'll check it out. If it doesn't get made, I'm not gonna be heartbroken about it. Sorry, Brian. Yeah, that's where I stand on that.
All right, so there you go. Brian is still having high hopes. I know Spider-Lantern, I know you're still holding high hopes. Again, I really don't believe Ryan Reynolds is the end-all to be-all of Deadpools. I think you could find another guy who's equally a, you know, the dude from The Hangover or whatever, get him to do it. You know, he's equally.
Which one?
Not Ed Helms. The best-looking guy.
Are you effing serious?
Bradley Cooper? The guy who they originally wanted to play Hal Jordan? Hell no, and I'm not even a big Deadpool fan like that, but that's a terrible idea.
I agree, that is a terrible idea.
This is why I'm not casting director.
I don't see him having the chops for it, really.
I completely agree. You really don't deserve to be casting this.
Sorry, I railed off there,
it's
but that was
3-1,
bad.
Dude.
How much you bet Bradley Cooper is going to get rumored if Ryan Reynolds pulls out?
I doubt it.
0%.
Johansson. Oh!
Oh!
Losing!
all right. Let's move on. That was our own bit of news. So since it is a light week of news, we're going to go double Book of the Week, something we haven't done since the very beginning of the show when I forced everybody to read two books. So we're going to go double Pick of the Week. First and foremost, because I decided to make Taser happy once in a while, the first Book of the Week will be Alpha Flight, Point Woo-hoo! One, the original team with Shaman, Sasquatch, Snowbird, Vindicator, the Guardian, and the gay one from the X-Men.
Wow.
Northstar.
Northstar. Wow. Can't get a name? That sucks.
But they don't have the best one. There's no Puck. No fucking Puck!
Isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. I didn't notice Puck.
Isn't he rotting in hell or something?
I don't care. It's supposed to have Puck, damn it.
Apparently, Puck's going to make his return in when the series actually launches. So.
It's Puckless.
Anyways, so this is this is sort of like basically a Zero issue, the new version of the Zero issue. We get introduced to the team. You get reintroduced to the team. Sasquatch, you know, Shaman, all the cool things. Who's that monster person at the bottom of the cover, though? I don't know who that is. I don't know who that is. She seems like a new addition to the team, so, I was curious.
Female?
Yeah.
She wearing white and blue?
No. That's Snowbird.
Oh, she looked like a fish.
The fish chick?
That's Marina.
Yeah, the fish chick. Not Snowbird, the fish chick.
That's Marina.
Okay.
Oh, Marina, whichever way you want to
put it. Yeah, okay. I didn't know. So we get introduced to the team. You get introduced to some of the politics. You get there's a big election, which that's the only negative thing I have to say about this issue. It's like, oh, you really have to bring the political nature of fucking Canada into this? Really? I admire Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente to trying to spice it up, but really, who fucking cares about Canada's politics but Canadians? Like, come on.
Canadians read comics too.
That's true.
We may have Canadian fans. Stop pissing off a fan base.
Blame Canada.
Mateus loves me.
But it's true.
Screw Mav. Mav sucks.
But
why is it only Mav?
Not gathering the team, but introducing who these characters were. Not really giving it clear what their powers are, you know, which, again, that's not really the most important thing, but you got to see who these characters were. There's a sort of, you know, obviously some members of Alpha Flight. Northstar doesn't trust Department H. That's the organization that is called that Alpha Flight works for. There's something going on with a team called Beta Flight, which sounds really lame. Like, that's your arch nemesis?
No, it wasn't. Omega Flight was the arch nemesis.
No. Like they mentioned the Beta Flight in this.
Yeah, Beta Flight was the backup squad. It was the B squad.
Okay,
it was
then I was confusing. And apparently there's a purple girl, or purple woman, who has the exact same powers.
She's the daughter of the Purple Man.
A Purple Man, I didn't know that. And I like the Purple Man's powers, and done right, Purple Man's powers can fuck you up. You know, we've seen this, but they didn't really, you know, she basically had a squad of soldiers fire at the Guardian?
Yeah,
the Guardian. I confuse Guardian and Vindicator so much, I don't know why. Similar costumes, except one has tits. although to see the whole wall of people like fold up
that crazy
monster, that was
was crazy.
That was cool. which leads me into the art aspect. I thought some of his storytelling was a little off. Like I couldn't tell what was going on in certain panels. Not everything, but I thought it was nice. Ben Oliver is a guy who hasn't. When he did stuff a while back, I was like, "Ooh, Ben Oliver." Now he kind of disappeared off the map. But to see him do this, I was kind of annoyed that this wasn't drawn by Dale Eaglesham, because he's the regular artist, and why not give the regular artist who's actually going to be on the book, you know, show him drawing Vindicator or Guardian with like on steroids times three. So, I mean, all in all, you know, it's, you know, cool for Alpha Flight fans. I'm not, and it felt like, and this is why I think it's the bullshit notion in comics that, like it had a tremendous history, it explained the history, but in a way where I didn't feel lost at all with this team. Then again, you know, so I give it a solid 3.6. It was fun, it was entertaining. I'm going to buy the new number one when it comes out in a couple of weeks that ties into Fear itself, apparently. So, yeah, Alpha Flight, fuck Canada. Arnold, what did you think of Alpha Flight 0.01?
I, too, thought it was a good issue, good start to a refresher of the team. As I told you guys before, ironically enough, before I read this, I just finished watching the old 90s episode of the X-Men animated series that featured Alpha Flight when they kidnapped Wolverine. Which was fun, which had Puck, who was missing from here, but I believe you said that he would be showing up later. But it was solid. I like the art. I'm not sure. Could you guys, anybody know stuff that I may have seen this other artist in before? I know you said you've read some things.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years since he's done his last project. I can't think of it, but I've seen his style. It's the same style, but like, it's just been a while.
Okay. It did feel a little familiar. But on the whole, it was a good issue. I like the stuff with Purple Woman. I, too, did not know the Purple Man had a daughter. That is brand new to me. But yeah, I'm liking this. I don't think I'm going to buy it, simply not because I thought it was bad, but because I just cannot afford another book. but I will be interested in listening out to hear what people say about it, and if it's good enough, maybe I'll get it in trade eventually. But I liked it. I thought it was good. I will give it a 3.5 out of 5.
And with that, Alpha Fight's already canceled. Brian, you're also the last time you saw Alpha Flight was them getting murdered by the Collective in New Avengers several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of this quote unquote this relaunch?
Well, I went into it with pretty low expectations, simply because, you know, it's Canada. I can't take Canada seriously. I honestly can't. that's not even a joke. I cannot take any, like, superhero team or villain they have seriously, just because it's Canada, you know? They're like, you hear the guy at the beginning of the issue is like 50% unemployment, and America's sitting down here. I just found it hard to believe. But anyway, moving away from that, the overall storytelling seemed to flow pretty good, you know. I liked that the characters were all kind of introduced in a way that gave them a uniqueness, I guess would be the way to describe it, you know. They feel like heroes who haven't read or seen a million different times in a million different number one issues, so it felt kind of refreshing to, you know, get a glimpse at what Canada's got going for it, even without the diminutive little fucker. moving on
from... Alone, damn you.
fuck. And you know, the villain was kind of cool. I'd be interested in seeing her come back at some point. As well as that other guy, whatever the hell his name was. Anybody? No? Awesome. I mean, it's just I guess it's all building towards something. That's what I got from the whole political atmosphere surrounding the issue. So, you know, I'll definitely pick up the number one, see where it's at from there. But as of right now, I'm not investing too much stock in it. But, you know, maybe that's what I need, you know, because I read all these books and some of them seem dark, some of them seem introspective. But this book just seems like it's something to have a little bit more fun with, I guess, would be the way to put it. And I don't think that's necessarily
bad.
Yeah,
and that's Pak and Fred Lynn. I mean, if you look at Incredible Hulk right now, like, shit, it was Mr. and Mrs. Smith, doesn't it, with the Hulks, you know? And,
right.
And Van Lente is known to bring the comedy.
Yeah, you know, so maybe it's not the worst thing that isn't so serious, you know, because everyone who, you know, reads a book needs something to just, you know, laugh off for every dark book they get, you know, because you only get so much dark without getting a little lighter stuff in there, you know, and mostly what I had from this point out was Deadpool, and that's kind of losing its luster to me, believe it or not. But
33 issues in, you figured it would.
Yeah. Overall, though, this issue was pretty good. I'm not going to knock it because it did thoroughly enjoy me. It surprised me at how much I actually ended up enjoying the issue, so that's good. I feel like the art maybe needs a little work, maybe come up with an interesting villain to do, because the villains, you know, well, they were kind of interesting, but I didn't get the whole giant human-made human
thing. What's going to get about it?
I don't know. That's the point.
It's a giant human, a giant monster made of humans, I mean.
Yeah, that seemed a little stupid to me. But
oh, come on, you're reading about a comic about Canadian superheroes. You can't get any more stupid than that.
True enough. Point conceded to Benjamin. Anyway, I got lawyered. I liked the issue. It pleasantly surprised me, but not enough that, you know, I'm like jumping out of my chair going, oh my God, you know? But then again, it is Canada. So, I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5 warriors. You know, nothing spectacular, but it's fun, and I think you'll enjoy it if you give it a chance.
All right. Now let's go to the person who's been waiting for this to happen for a long, 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 I look at my watch, long time. Taser, you're probably the longest-term Alpha Flight member here, fan here, because Taser's actually Puck.
Did not like this book. I was disappointed, mainly because, holy not shit. That I thought it was written wrong, but my thing is, Alpha Flight died in New Avengers something or other. Team got wiped out by, I think it was Mutant Omega.
Yeah, the one who absorbed all the mutant powers.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so got wiped out by a one-man army, for all intents and purposes. They got brought back during Chaos War, which, okay, so this is basically what DC did with the JSA back during Armageddon 2000. Hey, we got rid of somebody. We kind of want him back. Okay, let's have an event. And boom, there you go. Brought him back. Fine. So we come to here, and they're just like, yeah, whatever. That never happened. None of us died. We're just going, you know, we're already back into society. Nobody's, you know, there's no reflection or there's no change of venue. You know, it's like it never happened. That's what this story tells me. And that's such a wasted opportunity. You know, I'm not saying that every hero that comes back from the dead has got to go through this, but I think it's kind of important to at least address it. We're talking 5, 6 big national heroes that got offed. And hey, we're back. And there's nothing of that here. That to me was a huge mistake. You know, this is like nothing that had ever happened. It's just like a continuing adventures of look where we are now. Ooh.
Could I interrupt? Could I cut him real quick?
Go ahead.
All right. Maybe because this is a point one issue, and the purpose of the point one issue has to been a good jumping on point for new readers.
Which is exactly the point.
Once the new ongoing starts, then maybe you'll have those reflective moments of like we were dead and we fought, you know, in this, you know, what, you know what I mean? Maybe that's where you'll get your. Whereas this was really, you know, a zero issue, an introduction of who these characters were to people like me, Arnold, and Brian.
Yeah, but see, my thing is this though. This is where you would do it. You wouldn't do. You could maybe continue it over in the main series if you wanted to, fine. But this really is where you would do it because. Given what we saw here with Kilgrave and, you know, that Unity Party, that's more than likely that's going to be stuff that we see pop up in the monthly, okay? So this is the cornerstone right here of probably what we're going to end up seeing you know, being touched on, you know, relationship-wise, you know, Shaman actually being a medical doctor and, you know, doing an operation while his body's here. I'm going to be astral projecting myself over there. Da, 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 da. I don't think even freaking Strange can do that. So, you know, kudos to him.
Strange is a pussy.
Well, fuck you.
But
him against Tom Selleck mustache.
You know what they did here? It was a smack in the face to me. I thought it was a missed opportunity to address some of the stuff that had gone on, and I don't know. I was disappointed. You know, this book to me was
patience,
you know,
is a virtue. Maybe.
Excuse me.
Maybe she just gave him more time.
Fair enough. It's not the main title. Maybe it will pop up in it. Okay, fine, and it'll get addressed. I can work with that. But as this book right here, it's okay. You know, see, without that, this book is just whatever. You know, it's okay, yeah, this is that, this is that. I know the Purple Girl, Purple Woman, you know, which should probably be called, because I read Alpha Flight back in the day when she originally showed up. Nothing here was new. You know, it's just lacking Puck for all intents and purposes. It's lacking Puck and it's lacking Shaman's Daughter. So, you know, this doesn't go, hey, I want to read this. If you're new and you've never read Alpha Flight before, then, yeah, you could pick this up and you might be interested. As for if you've read it before, if you have any familiarity with Alpha Flight before, this book does nothing. You know, so I have to give it 2.5. I'm midlining it here. It's meh. Oh, really.
But I'm pretty. Are you gonna read the number one when it comes out in June 8th?
I'll like everything. I'll give it a try with the first three. If the first three don't hold me, I'm dropping it.
All right. Despite that you read Kyle Rayner for 5 years.
That was a mistake. Anyways. Huge mistake.
Anyways, so let's move on to our double book of the week, which was Uncanny X-Force number 10, the first part of the what is it called? The Dark Archangel Saga. Say that.
Dark Angel. Archangel already is dark. There's no way to...
Okay, so it's the Dark Angel Saga. So like Dark Phoenix, but okay. Anyways, this is part one. We've been on a critical high for on this for a while, but I have to say the one negative aspect of this book is Billy Tan's art. While it's a different inker and a different color, so his more of Tan's style came out, and that's not a good thing in my opinion. So that really hurt the quality of the story for me. His figures feel stiff to me. It just nothing feels fluent when he draws anything. If you look at some of his work on New Avengers, it just feels stiff. Like there's nothing feels natural. He can tell a story well. I can tell what was clearly going on, but other than that, not much. But the story, oh, finally, Archangel is losing his shit because we've been building from this since, not just since Uncanny X-Force number one, since it was revealed he could actually turn back into Archangel, which has been a while now that you think about it. It turns out that the only cure for this, because he's turning into Apocalypse, you know, this sort of evolutionary hierarchy that the next person in line is Archangel, which plays to the point that, okay, yeah, you're willing to kill the kid for Hitler because you don't know the kid, but are you willing to kill your best friend if you know he's going to become Hitler? You know, and you know this friend, you fought with this friend, you've done everything with them, but they become Hitler. Do you kill them or not? So what they're doing, and this leads into one of my favorite X story of all time. It leads into they get the Dark Beast, and the only cure for Archangel lies into the Age of Apocalypse alternate reality. So that's how we get into Age of Apocalypse. Overall, I say this issue was solid. It was cool to finally see Archangel lose his shit because it's been building for a while. But you know, other than that, it has me compelled to read the next issue, which I think finally now it's going back to monthly. So with that being said, I give it a solid 4 out of 5. It would have gotten a 5, but Billy Tan, come on, dude, you're better. You were good the first. For issue 9 with that Magneto story, you know, Magneto had Wolverine murder an old Nazi guy. So I give it a solid 4 out of 5. But let's go to Arnold. Arnold, did you like this issue as much as I did?
I did. I thoroughly enjoyed this issue, as I have been enjoying all the other issues of X-Force. I like where this is going. I was very intrigued as to how we were getting into this whole X-Force having to deal with the Age of Apocalypse, and I like the way that they decided to do it. From the whole Dark Beast aspect, I completely forgot about him, even though they dealt with his capture in this book itself. So I'm glad they're bringing him back. I always found him a fun, kind of interesting character. And the last time we saw him, he was tinkering around in the sewers with in Spider-Man or X-Men or both just recently. But I'm liking this. I can't wait to see how much badassery Archangel or Dark Angel is going to be pulling out. Because he seems like he's definitely lost it big time, and let's see if they'll kill him. They probably won't, though, knowing this. They have no reason to kill off Archangel, so I doubt it's going to happen, but we'll see. I will give it a...
No, but it'll be interesting to see if Wolverine will actually get... I mean, this is his best bud, so, I mean, he...
Right.
But, Brian, you read Uncanny X-Force, right?
Yes, I do, sir.
Did you? Are you going to continue to love for Uncanny X-Force, or are you going to break it down?
No, I'm gonna keep it up. You know, I'm gonna keep it at a steady pace. You know, like you, Ben, I did also notice a decline in the artwork. I wasn't crazy about it last time. Still not crazy about him, but overall, the story that they're heading towards does interest me a great deal because, you know, the Age of Apocalypse is always been one of the biggest questions in X-Men. You know, like what would happen if Apocalypse, if everything did work out for him, the X-Men weren't there to fight him and all that. And it is an interesting look into another way that things could be for mutants, and you know. The way things turn out, I always enjoy an alternate universe tale, but this thing, it seems like crazy, the way they're going to be making Archangel the next Apocalypse. That blew my mind. I mean, I didn't even think of that. That's crazy. And I'm excited that they're going in a direction that, is seemingly fresh, because I don't think this has ever been addressed, you know, Archangel being the, like, next in line to inherit Apocalypse's role. I'm not sure if that's been addressed before. I mean, I'm fairly new to the whole X universe, but that's just me. But overall, the story was good. I'm glad they included Dark Beast. It was a very smart choice to bring him in, you know, get him involved in the story, because, you know, I do rather enjoy his character. And the way everything is headed, it seems like a very, very interesting story. And I hope they do it justice in this book, which I think they will. But, again, I plead with the forces that be, you know, the ones who control the Marvel Universe, Stan Lee with his giant hand at the end of time, to please, please get a new artist.
Well, he's off the book, as of this issue, so...
Thank God. But that's just me, though. I give it a 4 out of 5, solid 4 out of 5, just because the art took away from it a lot from me, and that disappointed me. So, 4 out of 5 orders from me.
All right. Well, let's go on to individual reviews, and I'm taking a Fear Itself tie-in, surprisingly. Avengers number 13. This art, drawn by Chris Bocciolo. I was gonna skip this, but Bocciolo drew me in. And basically, to summarize,
Bocciolo's the man.
He's fucking great. Reason I picks up those issues of X-Men. Anyways, so basically, we get sort of a reality. This is what I like about superhero comics in a way. As much as fun as the big fights are, it's another thing bad to me when you get introspectives of the characters. Maybe not all of them, but you get some pieces of them. And in this instance, it's basically we learned that the Avengers have been making a documentary about themselves since the beginning of the team, which is, that's kind of cool. You know, we get the whole, like sort of, why are you sighing? I don't see what the sighing is about.
I agree with Taser. Wasn't that whole oral history crap they were running in the back of the Avengers books for, like, months?
Yeah. And, like, now it's just doing, and I think it's much better here. Like, I wouldn't want this in every issue, but, you know, seeing, like, them talking about different perspectives, I mean, it's clearly time jumping because you see Thor, like, with full beard and in different costumes and, you know.
Tony Stark with women.
Exactly.
And boobs. And
exactly. So I thought, you know, and what I mean by breathe the issue, and probably my favorite part of the issue is you get to see that Volstagg was hitting on Ms. Marvel, and Ms. Marvel trying to give Spider-Woman the Spock sign, like, this is supposed to come help me, you know, and sort of like they realize they haven't been dating anybody in a while, and apparently there's a budding romance between Ms. Marvel and not Ms. Marvel, Spider-Woman and Hawkeye, which, and like, wait a minute, isn't he, and like, no, apparently Hawkeye and Mockingbird are not married, but Mockingbird is still kind of like, who's he interested in? It's just sort of that, and you know this is going to end badly. You know, this can only end bad. Even in real life, if you date somebody within either a group of friends or work, usually it's not going to end good. Especially, you know, and especially then you put them on these high-profile teams. So, but I thought it was a really good breather issue, despite it as being a tie-in, because for the first 12 issues, including that point one of Avengers, it was boom, boom, boom. You know, for the large part, it was a lot of big, epic action sequences, you know, with very little room for character development and Steve Rogers being a hypocrite.
Wow, okay.
So, you know, this is nice, and I hope this Hawkeye-Spider-Woman romance is explored, because, you know, the Spider-Woman that he interacted with was a Skrull the last time they were together, so, you know, it was good, and Botchula was solid as well. I give it a 5 out of 5. This is my favorite, this is the best book I read this week, outside of Witchblade number 144. Yeah, let's go to Brian. Take it away.
All right, well, what is the book that I am reviewing is Ultimates versus New Avengers, something like that, number 4.
You can't even get the title right. Don't criticize me, asshole.
Hey, hey. Don't you come after me here, Sergeant Stutter, okay? Now, what we get in this book is, as our associate Arnold pointed out off recording earlier, is that as far as a tie-in to the Death of Ultimate Spider-Man goes, it's about 3 pages, and then you're back to the Avengers world. So if you're looking for any kind of Ultimate Spider-Man, you know, Ultimate tie-in, you can just walk out right now, because that's not what this book is about. This actually covers an ongoing plot inside the Ultimates and the Avengers. Essentially what's been leading up to this point is that different superpowers around the world have been getting hold of super soldier serums and stuff and building their own armies. And the plot comes to a head, and the big bad's finally revealed in this issue. And what we get from this is Nick Fury and his Black Ops Avengers team are captured, and Nick Fury is brought forward, and he talks with Gregory Stark. And it turns out that Gregory Stark is, in fact, the one who's been arming these countries with super soldiers. And it turns out that, in the grand scheme of things, he's actually making a play to become the head director of S.H.I.E.L.D. And he's doing this by arming pro-democracy groups around the world with super soldiers in order to overthrow regimes and make himself a international hero, which Nick Fury admittedly he admits it's a good plan, and he actually likes it a lot. But, you know, Gregory, seeing Nick as a liability, can't even get in the way. And so what happens in the end is that Nick ends up getting shot by 2 S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and seemingly dies. The story's good, consistent for what I've seen from this book. I really don't get why they had to slap the whole Ultimate Death of Spider-Man on there or whatever. You know,
marketing,
really just
sales.
Yes, yes, yes. But still, my logic does not acknowledge greediness. This is Marvel. That's in DC. This is Marvel.
Whatever.
Anyway,
so much shady business in the Ultimate with the Avengers, man.
It really is. Nick Fury's
bunch of
dick,
dirty, man. Underhanded sons of bitches.
It really is. They are just like dirty, you know, get it done, get out, you know, kind of guys. And
Spider-Man is all sunshine and rainbows compared to that shit.
Oh God, I know.
That's
and
all
you got
this book. Doing, baby.
This book's just like the underbelly of everything that's going on in the Ultimate Universe, you know. And you know, I thought it was good. I really enjoyed it. I love the art. I have a soft spot for Lino Yu. He great artist. And the story, of course, is great. I'm really, really looking forward to see how it comes to a head in the next issue, because it's really got me. It's got me by the balls right now, and I'm really excited to see it continue. So, overall, great art, great story. I was pleasantly pleased by it. I just don't get what I had to tie it in with Ultimate Spider-Man outside of the whole, you know, marketing and sales and all that stuff, which is complete bullshit. No, but I thought it was great, and actually, barring that, I'll give it a 5 out of 5. I really thought it was a fantastic issue.
All right, because I want to get this out of the way. Taser, go ahead and blast Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ultimate Spider-Man picks up right from the point where, we saw what happened to the bridge in Ultimates versus New Avengers. Okay.
Yeah, it collapsed.
From that point on, we see what happens in regards to Spider-Man. You can kind of guess from the last chapter we saw him in the other book. Jump from there, Spider-Man sees the Sinister Six headed somewhere, and it's gut check time, and he decides that, well, I got to go take care of business because I'm Spider-Man, and that's what I do. the six run into, well, two
you mean
of the residents
five,
of his.
Doc Ock's dead.
You know. You're right. Thank you for correcting me. Anyway, the five, they take and they catch up to Bobby and Johnny as they're coming home from a double date. Bobby's complaining because his chick apparently didn't like the fact that he had cold hands. They show up and where's Peter Parker? What? Peter Parker, F you! And, you know, they proceed to do battle, and then, you know, powers are used, and apparently the kids are used to fighting these guys, which kind of makes sense. And they, you know, they end up falling until, bum, 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 ooh, big surprise, freaking Spider-Man shows up. Now, before I continue, how many more issues of this Death of Spider-Man is left? Is it just the next one?
Two more. 159
Two more?
And 160.
Okay. Based on how this one ends, I was pretty much on point with how this is going to pan out, because this showed the start of the big heroic thing. This is the start of it right here, you know? The next issue is going to be the big all-out, you know, villain smush with him wounded and, you know, just trashing people and getting bashed around himself. And, I'm going to wait and predict how the next one ends, although I can probably guess. It won't end with him heart dead, you know, heart stopped, dead, eyes open, and everybody going, holy shit, look, Spider-Man's dead. It won't end like that. There'll be something else there. But
a part of me really wants it to.
Yeah, right.
I do.
As a continuation of the story, this you know, it got the job done. I can't fault it. I can't praise it either because it was fairly predictable. I'll give it 3 points. No, you know what? I'll give it 3 Warriors out of 5. 3 flat.
You know, and I regretted saying blasted, but whatever.
No,
I'll wait. I'm pretty sure you'll blast 160 when that.
No, this issue itself wasn't written badly. It's just that
the predictability.
The storyline is predictable.
Yeah,
and
but I mean,
exactly what I said was going
to
happen.
Isn't always bad. Like, not to me, at least, when
you can tell what's going to happen, that's bad. You know, that shows that, well, okay, I don't know what to do here, so I'm just going to do the most obvious thing possible.
Yeah. I'll give Dennis the benefit of the doubt. I like his stuff. But,
yeah, okay.
You know.
Ride that dick. Go ahead.
Let's go. I don't have a comeback. I was trying to think of it. He doesn't know anybody. let's go to Arnold. Arnold, take it away.
My book of the week, I decided to pick X-Men Prelude to Schism, number 2 of 4. Last issue of this, for anybody that read it, just a quick run through. Scott's kind of having a powwow of sorts with various people in the X-Men, or I guess his peers, I guess, so to speak. The first issue dealt with him mostly speaking with Xavier and trying to get his point of view on things. And this issue dealt with him talking to Magneto. In this, you get a glimpse into Magneto's past, like kind of a brief, straight-up run-through of just like a little bit of history through his dad and his father dying and him growing up in the concentration camps and falling in love and things like that, just what he's kind of learned along the way and passing those words of wisdom kind of on to Scott and saying, you know, kind of telling Scott that the person he's become now compared to the person that he's seen him, you know, the drastic change, and he does realize, you know, he now has the whole weight of the, you know, mutant world kind of on his shoulders, and even Magneto's point of view of things is starting to change, and he's starting to wisen up a bit. I thought this book was excellent. I'm really liking the direction that they're taking Magneto with things. It's not, you know, the more and more he's around, unless, I mean, they're going to go that old route again. I mean, the more he's around, the less you feel like he's up to shady business, and you think maybe this is it. Like, maybe he's really realized that all the other bullshit's got to end. Like, all that's left is that is it of his people. So he's got to stick around and help and do his part and fight for, you know, what's going on. A point of note, 2 issues in, they still have yet to talk about what this big this whole big issue is that they're supposed to be fighting or going after. That's potentially going to break these two apart. They did just release a teaser image of Scott and Logan going at it as per usual. So, you know, the teasers are starting to come for Schism proper. But I like this. The art was okay. It was nothing fantastic. You know, kind of, just kind of indifferent. Nothing really wowed me, but solid issue. If you're not picking this up, I suggest giving it a read. I think the next issue may be Scott-centric, and I'm sure he's supposed to have one with Wolverine, because there's supposed to be four issues, and they do mention that he's supposed to be speaking with all of them, and they're referring to him as the General's Orders now, which I thought was interesting. But give it a read. I like it. I can't wait to see where it goes. I want to know what this Schism stuff's about and how the whole break amongst the mutants is supposed to be going down that they've been promising in the future.
All right.
I'll give it a good 4 out of 5.
So are you on Team Cyclops or Team Wolverine?
I haven't decided yet. I'd like to know what the issue is that they're picking sides on.
I'm on Team Wolverine.
That's why I wasn't automatically Team Spider-Man when Civil War broke out.
Oh, yeah. Well, he eventually switched sides, so.
Yeah.
Which, come up, we'll talk about that later. Let's move on to the one the Tasers were waiting for. Our Versus of the Week returns. Superman returns Superman versus Thor movie version. Now, I'm just going to say it right now. I'm going to take the God of Thunder and Mjolnir, who pwned a bunch of Frost Giants and broke down the Bifrost Bridge, took, not defeated, but, you know, handled the Destroyer armor, defeated his brother, you know. I'm going to take him over the creepy stalker jealous ex-boyfriend who lifted a rock. Thor wins. Arnold. Thor, Superman, movie Superman or movie Thor?
Assuming Superman is Superman susceptible Returns. To Superman Returns, whatever, is susceptible to magic, Thor wins. Done.
Brian, are you going to make it? All right, if you choose Thor, it's a sweep.
No, it's not. You forgot to use it.
Well, it's
yeah, see, this is what pissed me off. I don't know whether to...
I already know Taser's vote.
No, the problem with me is that the way I classify Thor, whether he's an alien or whether he's a magical god. No, in the movie he states that science and magic will play a part in his creation.
If he's magic, it's still Pwn Superman.
If he's science, bullshit. He loses. If he's magic, he wins. That's my pick.
So who do you pick? Do you pick Superman or you pick Thor?
I just told you, depending on what the case is, either Thor wins or he loses.
Everybody gets one.
Tell him,
Family Guy.
This isn't fucking soccer. This isn't Sucker? Hockey.
Okay, well, look here, Benny boy. Are we classifying? We're classifying him as a god, then?
We're classifying him as a god. They never said he wasn't.
He did say that he did have science. Like science played a part in the tools of his world.
Sci-fi it? Science?
No. It was basically, what was it like?
Godly science?
Science is magic. Like, magic is science that isn't explained.
Yeah, magic is science, one of the same thing in his world.
It's basically the same thing, that just doesn't know about it yet. So, this is classified as magic.
Which means it's comic movie bullshit. There you go.
Oh, yeah, I'm still gonna take him. Even if he wasn't, I would still take him over the creepy ex-boyfriend who lifted a rock.
He hasn't done anything in the movie that Superman wouldn't go, what the fuck? What are you trying to do? Okay.
Look, despite the fact that he's a creepy stalker, okay, he is in fact one of the most powerful beings on the face of the earth. So, you know, there's that.
And observedly so.
He lifted a rock.
He lifted a fucking landmass.
Thor lifted a hammer. What's your point?
He lifted a rock.
Thor lifted a hammer. What's your point?
And destroyed the Bifrost Bridge, and pwned a bunch of Frost Giants.
Yeah, he beat up something that stood still. he beat up a stationary object. Ooh!
I'm still going to take the God of Thunder
over. You know what? If this was Thor from the comics, he could have cracked... if he'd have cracked Bifrost barehanded, I wouldn't even argue it. But he used Mjolnir to do it. Movie Thor could not do that barehanded. Movie Thor didn't do anything that showed he had any type of strength, super strength whatsoever. None whatsoever. Okay?
That's true.
His
hammer was his strength.
He took a lot of damage from those Frost Giants. They kept hitting him, and he kept coming back.
He got touched twice. He got touched twice. What are you talking about? He got touched twice. Everything else was him twirling a hammer and knocking everybody else away. And he didn't get jumped or pummeled or anything. So
I was going to point out that Superman doesn't have his dad to kick his ass to the curb, so I'm going to give points to Superman for that.
All right, so are you going to pick Superman or Thor? Are you going to pick Superman or Thor?
I'm going to pick Superman just to spite you.
Nice.
All right, Taser, I already know you're going to pick Superman. You've been over
Yeah,
this.
But at least I still get to have my piece.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
All I'm saying is this. I like Thor. Thor is not high on the list of Marvel movies for me, but I like the movie. Based on the damage output that Thor did, Superman can handle that. He can tank that. I mean, I'm not saying that getting hit with Mjolnir wouldn't hurt him, but it's not going to floor him. It's going to do less damage to him than it did to the Destroyer armor. It took two hits to put that down. Okay, it's going to take way more than that to put him down. It might even knock him away. Fine, I have no problem with that. But he's not getting knocked out. It's going to take a hell of a lot more. He could probably tank the lightning bolt. And this isn't the comic guy. We've seen no magic that says, oh, it's magic, so of course. We haven't seen that. We're talking movie here. Okay? We haven't seen anything with Superman Returns, that movie, or even the three movies, ignoring three and four. One, two,
Richard
and
Pryor
five.
That.
I like the Richard Pryor movie, but we're talking the continuity movies. That which would be one, two, and five. We've seen nothing in them that conventionally would fuck Superman up beyond Kryptonite. And Lightning Bolt, what? Come on. Please. There's nothing here. The man helped up. He helped secure the continental shelf of the west coast of the United States. Okay? The man can fly around the planet and go through time. Now, I'm not saying that he'll be speed blitzing, but offensively, Superman has got it all over Thor. You know, you can't dick write Thor here. I'm sorry. Thor does not have what it takes. In this movie, Thor did not display anything that would put Superman down for the win. He hasn't shown it.
All right. Well, regardless of the fact, because Brian voted in spite, it's a tie. So we're leaving it up to you. Spider-Lantern, Gamadron, vote. You guys are going to be, and of course, Mateus wants to show up. Or Shingo.
Based it off of the two movies.
Based on
not the comics, movies. just the two movies, what we've seen them capable of doing. All
right.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay, those are the parameters. So, again, that ends our Versus of the Week. I'm not going to announce it because I can't think of any characters. I'm pretty sure we'll have one next time. Maybe Michael Keaton Batman versus Matt versus
no.
Versus.
No. I got it.
No. Hold on. Well, let me say mine and you'll say yours. Keaton Batman versus Ben Affleck Daredevil. Maybe. Who knows?
Okay.
That is the most lopsided matchup ever.
All right, we're doing it. Michael Keaton Batman.
Keaton Batman versus Reeve Superman. Let's go there.
We're gonna do
world's finest, bitch.
We're gonna do it.
I'll say this: we'll do M Dragon 1 versus Fearless.
Mortal Kombat. I'm about to fight Christopher in about a few minutes.
Get over here.
Let's now let's go on to some announcements real quick. Next week, yes, it is gonna be next week. Should be either next week or the week following will be our big episode we've been talking about, our Civil War retrospective. Following that, will be our shortly, the next special should be following because after that, the next one will come out for a while, will be our X-Men First Class special. After that, me and Brian are going to be joined by Chris to do our Secret Warriors retrospective. Because it's a series that deserves a retrospective, and hey, why not?
Garbage.
Damn straight, Skippy.
Garbage crap.
And then finally, the last one that I can foresee, which will be in July, Captain America, the First Avenger.
Hold on. Why does he get to be the First Avenger?
Because in this continuity, technically he is.
What?
Because he had to go through all that crap.
No, but I think it's just a marketing to get like people excited for the Avengers.
That's what I'm saying.
What?
Fucking lame.
What if they call him an Avenger in the movie? I mean, would you?
He had to suffer through all that terrible CGI and look like a freaking midget. Terrible. Don't you think he deserves that title?
think it looked. Anyways, that we'll talk about. Anyways, so those are our specials. Civil War.
He looked like fucking Dakota Fanning, the little unlucky bastard.
Civil War will.
What was that about, dude? Dakota Fanning? Huh? What?
He looked like Dakota Fanning. I swear to God.
Flat chested and scrawny.
Isn't that anyway? We'll get into it later. Anyway, so there you go. Civil War. Our Civil War registration should be coming in the next 2 weeks, followed by X-Men First Class, Secret Warriors, and then of course Captain America: The First Avenger. But as always, I'm your host Ben. Arnold, Brian, and Taser all say goodbye. We'll see you all next week for episode number 66 as we return to the Mighty Thor to see Galactus, Silver Surfer versus Galactus, and the beautiful images of Olivier Coipel. See you all next week.